All right, everyone, mailbag today. We're going to be taking a look at second-generation Fi, digital clutter, assessing risk tolerance, windfalls, and more. Welcome to the ultimate crowdsource personal finance show. This is Choose Fi.
You're listening to Choose Fi Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
Guys, very excited to dive into this week's episode. Got a lot of topics planned. And to help me with this, I have my co-host Brad here with me today. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Jonathan. I am doing quite well. It is it's Memorial Day weekend. So you know what that means for my family, right?
Well, I actually don't, because there's a conflict here. I know that the Barretts have a symbiotic relationship with the pool, but I also know that the Barretts have a goal of being at the pool when no one else is there and everyone is there on Memorial Day weekend. So I'm actually curious, how's the frolicking going to work out for you guys?
Oh, I love that word, frolicking. Yeah, that is a very good question. And what an active listener you are, Jonathan. I'm so impressed. So impressed.
God gave us two ears and one mouth, right? And I have ignored that for most of my life. But right now, listening.
Very impressive. Yeah, you know, that normally you would be exactly right. And I think I said this on a recent podcast, actually. It's like, yeah, we try to think just a little bit differently, not like we're brilliant or anything. I'm not trying to argue anything like that. But if we can avoid crowds by going a day or so later to anything, you know, whether it's Mother's Day, going out to eat, or like you said, going to the pool, like we're generally speaking at our local community pool, probably the most of any family there, but we don't go on Member Appreciation Day. We don't go on July 4th, but we actually do go on Memorial Day weekend because, man, it just feels so great. That first day the pool is open and everybody's there. It feels like a change of the season. You know, it feels like summer has arrived. So anyway, you can obviously hear the smile.
You're in Jonathan, a great mood because you know it's close. We're not even there yet. We're recording this a couple days ahead of time and you know it's coming.
That anticipation, it's amazing. But yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, coming out of COVID and rules are relaxing and, you know, it's just going to be nice to be there with all our friends.
Can I just add one thing? Because I don't think people necessarily appreciate this, but just to brag on your kids for a second. When we started this podcast, I remember there was a point in time where your both your daughters, but in particularly Anna, you know, picked up swimming and we were talking about, you know, what that would mean and just kind of, you know, strategizing a little bit about what this means if they were to continue with this. And over the interim of time, so now, Anna has become a swimmer of legends. I mean, she is like just knocking down records left and right. And as I think through this, I bet you there's very few people in this state, maybe in this country, that spend as much time in the pool as Anna. And probably a large part of that is the way that you've built your life around the pool. Like she's actually becoming a fish. And that's a real disadvantage that all of us have to people like Anna and Michael Phelps, is we're not part fish.
Not part fish. Yeah, I like to think that just our love of being there and, you know, how much time we spend together. Like, you know, it's funny, Jonathan, because I was at a retreat that Dominic Cortuccio put on this past weekend. And I was talking to a guy who was there and he's a little bit older. He has kids in their 20s. And he was talking about, you know, what are those things that your kids talk about years down the line? Like, what are the things they remember from their childhood? And it's not always like the big trip or that expensive whatever. It's maybe something unusual. You know, like for him, he was a single dad with three daughters and he didn't have much money at that point. And he took his kids to a local pet shop and they would just kind of walk around the pet shop once a week, you know, on the weekends when he had the girls. And it was just a really special moment for them. And I think, you know, there is kind of a Fi story here, right? Of like, it's not always about that expensive X, right? That expensive experience, that expensive thing, that expensive whatever, right? It can sometimes just be about doing something different, you know, spending time together, like just doing something out of the ordinary. I thought that was really brilliant. I was trying to think, like, what are the things that my kids will remember? And I suspect, like, we have this silly game that we play in the pool that, like, it basically looks like the two girls like drowning me, but it's not like it's, you know, it's hard to explain, honestly, and it's not worth going into. But I was thinking in my head that was the thing. And actually my daughter Anna brought it up the other day. She's like, oh, I can't wait to play. And we call it Let's Go Somewhere. It's just this silly game. Like, I can't wait to play Let's Go Somewhere. Like, she's a 13-year-old girl. And like, that's the thing she's looking forward to. It was just one of those special moments. And yeah, I mean, it's really, it's neat. It's, you know, to take that step back and like, what are those things that your kids are going to remember? So yeah, it was neat to see her actually say that.
Well, you know, as I kind of think through that, this has been a point of growth in the Mendonca household as well, because when you're parents with multiple kids, even with a child, it is very easy to allow the TV, and I'm guilty of this, so I'm saying this as someone that's guilty. It's very easy to allow the TV to be a babysitter, especially when you have to get work done, you know, when you have to get other things done. And my wife has done a great job really being that defensive wall and preventing that from happening too much. When dad is sometimes looking to take maybe the easy way out because he's trying to get this last minute thing done. And so we as a family have really been, and I've been a little defensive about it because, you know, there's always a good reason. There's always something else I need to get done or whatever. But she's been really watching and pushing us in this direction. And at some point, you know, I was in the place to hear that and it was a place to take action on that. And I feel like I've kind of really made a mental shift significantly over the last several months. And I've actually started to focus on a few of exactly what you just said, but not necessarily, I wasn't thinking about it. What are they going to look back at 4 or 5 years from now or as an adult and remember that we did? But now in light of this conversation, I think that it will be. And there's a couple things that we're trying that are coming to mind. They will not give you credit for all the extra episodes you let them watch of Dora the Explorer. You're not going to get extra credit for that when they're in high school or as an adult, right? So it really is going to be the time that they got to spend with you and the cool things they got to do with you, the time that was spent. So what does that look like for us? There's like five, I think it's five things that we're intentionally and actively leaning into right now. And I just want to talk about them out loud because they're not particularly expensive. And they also tie to things that we've talked about on this episode. The first one, and this is a big project, is gardening or a garden. Not a garden to necessarily save a ton of money or slash our grocery bill, et cetera, although we are going to do food. Actually, we had a listener call in a wonderful voicemail, and we'll have it linked up in the show notes for that episode. I don't have it right now, but they were basically telling us, why does everybody try to grow tomatoes? They're kind of hard. Like, you can, but they're kind of hard. Instead, you should just try to grow squash. They grow like weeds. And if you strategize it, do some garden boxes, you could have squash year round. And that's actually something that we eat a decent amount of. So 2 weekends ago, we built 3 garden boxes. We just got the kits from Lowe's, maybe it was Home Depot. And we built 3 garden boxes out in the backyard. And I have ordered the seeds and they're coming in, and we're going to go get our hands dirty. We're going to make sure we get some dirt under the fingernails, and we're going to plant some seeds and try to grow some squash and see what happens. So that's one. And I'll keep going down this. There's like 4 or 5 things that are all big things. And like, you know, when you're thinking, well, what are we going to do, et cetera. The other one is bike rides around the neighborhood. We are really leaning into bike rides. So right now, my kids are at an interesting age. They're 4 and just under 2. And so we're at this kind of, he's about to be riding a bike totally on his own, but he's not quite there yet. So we went ahead and got a second seat for the back of the bike. And my wife and I, we, you know, it's 30 minutes to an hour that multiple times a week we take them on a bike ride. That's 2. 3 is, how often do you just run? I realize as an adult, I've gotten very good at just like sitting in one place, including this podcast, talking to you. The most exercise or movement I get is my hands. That's why you guys see me using my hands all the time. It's the only exercise I get throughout the day. You can vacuum. But as a kid, they're constantly squirming and moving and just, they never sit still. We learned that as an adult, that we evolved to burn the least amount of energy possible. So I was just like, all right, what would it look like for us just to let loose and run in a field without our shoes off? Like, what would it look like to create that or go find that or replicate that experience? So I've been teaching my son how to throw a Frisbee, and we'll just go to the field and let's just get, you know, ridiculously muggy and sweaty, et cetera. Let's just try to do that. So that's like and then there's 2 more and they're tied together, but that's going to get me to 4 and 5. One of them is, all right, so we just talked about, we set the TV up as kind of this like straw man, bad guy, right? So what are we watching? Like, it is so beautiful outside. Now, maybe not amazingly beautiful in my suburban neighborhood. Like, it's a lot of brick and, you know, and wood and trees, but like the sky is pretty cool. we don't really look at the sky very often. Like, let's just lay down on the back porch or on the grass and let's look at the clouds and use our imagination to figure out what's going on with the clouds. And if we're going to do that, what if we could send something up to the clouds? We bought a kite this week. So we got a kite. And now we've only been able to fly it when we're running again through the hot, muggy field. It won't stay up at this point. We might have to wait till fall, but we had a lot of fun trying. And at some point that kite is going to be in the sky and we're going to sit up there watching it go through the clouds. So those are five things. And all of us, most people heard that and said, that's a pretty good childhood. That's a pretty cool childhood. And your version of this will probably look different than ours, but my drift status is, look, dad needs to spend five more minutes getting this email typed up. Why don't you guys just watch another episode of Dora the Explorer? Like, I know that's a safe place. It's a good show. It's educational. You're learning something. You guys go over there. Let me just finish this up and then we'll go get dinner, right? You got to make choices in life and some of them are harder than others, but this has been a point of intentionality over the last couple of weeks to create to use other language that we've referenced on the show. We had a whole episode around this. What are our options for spontaneous adventure? Right? Like, you don't need to think about what are we going to do with this 30-minute spot or what are we going to do with this hour spot that we have, which is all you have as a parent with young kids. You only have 1 to 2 hour windows tops. You're going to be local probably. So what are your options that are fun and that are memorable?
Yeah. And Jonathan, that was episode 76. I think we called it Plan Spontaneity with Mrs. Adventure Rich. And yeah, there's something to that, right? Which is, I think if you wait until the last minute hey, we've got some free time. What are we going to do? And you all kind of stare at each other and have no idea. As opposed to, hey, maybe you apply a little bit of intentionality, right? That's why it's planned spontaneity, because it enables you. It's like that Jocko Willink quote that I've said so many times on the podcast, which is discipline equals freedom. You put a little bit of work in. Front loading the sacrifice might be a better way of putting it. Like, you maybe spend a couple hours brainstorming as a family of, hey, what are the 20 things that we would like to do the next time we have an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, whatever it is. And then you have that list, right? And I remember on that episode, she said, like, they even had like to-go bags of like things that were ready. Like, if they wanted to go to the beach or wherever it was, like, hey, you're just ready, you know? And I think there's a lot to be said for that, because I know myself personally, like, whenever I have to like brainstorm something at the moment, I'm like complete blank. I mean, I've got nothing. So that definitely appeals to me, just having that said. And, you know, another thing you said in there was kind of talking about really intentionality, right? And that, I've got five more minutes of work, or I've got five more minutes of this. And
that's gotta be like the most painful thing a kid can hear. Like, nobody trusts your 5 minutes. Nobody. No. Your 5 minutes has no credibility at this point.
Yeah. And mine is always, I'm just going to go upstairs and whatever.
They see you sneaking up the stairs and you get the glare. Like,
oh yeah. Cause they know it's not going to be, I'm just getting changed. It's, I'm walking by my computer. I'm going to check. And that turns into 7 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever. And, you know, Jonathan, we talked about that on episode 320 recently. I think we titled it, how many days a month do you experience stress related to work? But it was really large in that, right? It was about, like, you know, work-life balance and carving out an intentional life. And I actually got more emails from listeners from that episode than any in recent memory. Just people saying, like, I didn't even tell you this, as I can see by the surprise on your face. Like, I think people are crying out for that, right? Like, they're crying out for, hey, maybe I do need it. And maybe they weren't even realizing it consciously. Because I know, like, I backslide, you backslide. Like, you know, we get into these ruts and, like, sometimes it just takes that little spark. And maybe that episode did it for a lot of people to say, like, hey, I don't think things are going right now. Even if things are good financially, things are good, whatever. Like, you know, maybe I'm a little out of balance. And, you know, you and I are both joking about that. Hey, I'm just going to go upstairs. Hey, it's five extra minutes. Hey, it's whatever. And yeah, I mean, you can picture, like, do the people around you trust you when you say that? Or do they think you're a fraud? You know, I suspect deep down when I say that, my kids know I'm a fraud, right? Oh, I'm just going to go put my contacts in, or, I'm just going to get changed, or, you know, they know I'm not coming right down. And what does that say about me? You know, and this is not to, like, unnecessarily beat myself up or whatever, but, like, I think you need to be honest with the people around you. And I think you need to be honest with yourself, right? About, am I out of balance? And I know I have been of late, And I'm glad that that episode really, really did strike a nerve and a chord with people. I suspect there are a lot of people that are, you know, we just get in these ruts, like I said, and sometimes you just got to take a step back and just think about, hey, what do I want my life to look like?
And, you know, Brad, as you were mentioning, do you experience stress related to work? And we just talked about intentionality and credibility with regards to our kids. One thing that comes to mind is the amount of time that we are afforded to spend with our kids is dramatically been increased for the majority of people that are out there that are listening to this. There are a quantifiable percentage of individuals that are now working from home, and that is the new world. That is the world that we're living in now. And they have not, over the last year, come up with effective strategies to allow them to navigate that. Now, most of us see the unbelievable opportunity that could be afforded if we could master the strategy from working from home, but we don't have this toolkit, the skill set to really allow us to leverage it like we ought. So let me just get a little bit more specific here. When you can work from home, you get to pick when you're working. There's potentially 30 minutes on either side that you no longer have to account for. And it's on you to work through distractions. On the one end, you don't really have the water cooler conversation. On the other end, especially with those of you that have kids, you have a TV on potentially in the same room. You have activities going on downstairs. You have your son or daughter coming upstairs and asking you for little favors to come check in. And when you don't have coping mechanisms, and we want to outperform and show our employer that we are really crushing it, work can spill out of the boundaries that would be naturally contained in a 9-to-5 or a, you know, 5-to-9 or whatever. They spill out of those boundaries and they spill into every aspect of our life. So even if, and this is a point of conflict, it can be a point of resentment if we don't really lock this down. In our mind, we are in a stressful situation. We're in a new situation and we're trying to make it work. And two things are happening. One, because we really haven't figured out how to, you know, focus and get rid of all the distractions, we're not working as efficiently as we want. It's dripping into other aspects of our life. And that's in the best case scenario, in some cases, when you're just focused on work, but work is taking longer because you have more distractions. In other cases, we think we're working really hard, but in reality, we're just kind of checking our email, we're checking social, it's on the other tab, and everything does just take longer. And so when your kids come in to ask you for a favor, you know, it would be very tempting for us to identify them as the reason that we're not getting all of our work done and almost have some resentment like, you know, you need to give me this space. I'm providing for the family. But we also need to be very honest and say, is it really the kids or is it I'm distracted by having 25 tabs open on my computer, nobody looking over my shoulder because I'm not in a cubicle anymore, or whatever that might look like for you. Being able to listen to my audiobook while I get my work done, et cetera, having a TV on in the other room because I like white noise and I couldn't do this. You know, these are just realities that people are having to work through. And so I would just say that boundaries, being very intellectually honest with how you're using your time, if you feel like you don't have any time, but you effectively have the same job that you had before, is massively, massively critical. And so once you have identified how effectively am I using my time, you might need to have hard conversations with your family to say, look, I know dad or mom, I'm working from home right now. I know that's different and you're not used to having me here, but I am at work and I'm accountable for these results for this period of time. I am not present. I'm not going to make up excuses to you about how I'm going to go put my contacts in because I am not available and you need to respect the window that I'm here. And I know we don't have a third room in the house. I know we don't have a dedicated office. I know I'm working in the same living room as you and it's all going to, but you have to respect this space because in order to make this work, we have to all be on the same page. But if we as a family can agree on this, I am going to put boundaries around my time with you as well and really prioritize you. This is what you get. Our weekends or our Fridays or our Thursdays, whatever it looks like for you, they are sacred. And so you have to start building your credibility from scratch. And one, they have to honor that. Like, I have to get this work done. I am not available for this period of time to whatever degree you're able. Some of us don't always have that luxury of being able to say that, but if you can, but then on the flip side, it's not all give for them. They are also getting, and then you protect their window as well. And this is, all right, it starts with you being intellectually honest about how much time that you're spending. And then you can then more effectively communicate that to your partner, to your children, to whatever, you know, to whatever degree they're listening to your reason at this point. But that will go a lot farther if you, with your time with them, are giving them the same level of commitment that you're giving your work inside of those boundaries that you've created for that. So I just wanted to point out the balance there and going to that communication piece. If we have that credibility is demoed in a lot of different ways. And credibility you get in other areas of your life, will allow you to have more credibility here. And I'll give you an example. And this was a real point of growth for me in terms of talking about communication with my kids. So Chooseify Publishing worked with Doug and Carol to get the book, Raising Your Money Savvy Family for Next Generation Financial Independence. It's all about second generation financial independence. One of your privileges and your opportunities as a parent is to have money conversations with your kids. Most of us don't want to give our kids a silver spoon, but we would love for them to be able to build on what we have built and continue to build into the future. And the problem is, most of us recognize the problem with the silver spoon is that is the shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves and three generation story that translates into every single culture around the world. So if you just like hand them all the hard work you've done, they're going to burn through it. There's no money lessons taught. So and I'm tying credibility to this. One of the ways that you can start building credibility is actually through these early conversations with your kids. And after talking with Doug and Carol, I realized I had a point of credibility. I had a point that I could improve on with these early conversations. And it goes through the lens of allowance, chores, and jobs. And by reading that book and by talking with them directly, they gave me some clarity on what the differences between those are. And the biggest one that I came up with, and this isn't dogma, but I think in light of credibility, this is massive. And it's something I've been working on with my son. We made the decision as a family to give my son, as a four-year-old, a $1 a week allowance. That's four quarters. Four quarters.
That's cute.
$1 a week. Mm-hmm. My daughter at 2 years old gets 50 cents a week. First money lesson, don't swallow the quarters. It's a big lesson. It's high risk. All right. But the next one was, and this is where, as a parent, I did not prioritize this. And if I hadn't caught it soon enough, and I only caught it because really Doug and Carol called me out on it, I could have lost credibility. First of all, what is an allowance? People have different definitions, and I'm not here to tell you the absolute one for everyone, but based on my conversations with Doug and Carol, we came to the conclusion and we agreed with them that an allowance is something that a child gets regardless of behavior. It's something that they get. And this is a little bit controversial. So you need to kind of understand the larger framework. And this isn't the conversation. That's not what we're doing today. But I just want to point out credibility here. We made the decision that allowance is something they get regardless of behavior. It's because they're a part of this house. And it's because we're using this as a tool to teach them money lessons at an early age. We're teaching them, and this is going to sound counterintuitive, we're teaching them to spend money, that money is an exchange of value. They can get things they want with money. Now, we're going to quickly come to the point as a part of doing these money lessons that their wants will very, very quickly exceed their means. They will not have enough money to buy everything that they want, which then starts to add on to this, like a time value of money. It adds as opposed to this is a shiny object that rattles in a can. That's where we're going with this. But the allowance in the past was when dad had the energy and spare change, that's when the allowance was doled out. It was not taken as seriously as it could have. It was done, all right, guys, you know, once every 2 weeks, once every 3 weeks, whatever. And after talking to Doug and Carol, they reprimanded me, right? And gave me some correction on this. You need to take this absolutely seriously. And once you get started on it, you need to do it or whatever pace you say every single week to the degree that your kids know it's payday. And and they can count on this. And it's not like you're in a bad mood, so you don't give it to them. Like if you have behavior issues, we need to deal with behavior issues. That's not the point. There are other methods that we do that. But when it comes down to Friday, that's for us, we've made Friday our payday. Friday at 4:30 p.m., dad checks out of work completely. He might be a little dumb before that, but Friday at 4:30, I've put a boundary up and now I recognize that my credibility is attached to this. I have quarters. I have probably $30 to $40 worth of quarters stashed away. Don't tell my kids that. It's stashed away. I'm ready to go, right? I went to my bank and I got them to give me some stashes. So they're good to go. I've got it. On Friday, we have a sit down. They're super excited. And Zachary can bank that he's going to get four quarters. And Reese can bank on the fact that she's going to get two quarters. Dad's not going to be in a bad mood and not do it. It is going to happen. And what you're dealing with them is money doesn't become this scarcity thing that only when the parents are feeling in a good mood or they're not insane, that's when we get it. No, it's just, this is something that you can count on. And I really do think this is a real place that we can start to establish credibility and we can start to establish some boundaries and then we can build on this, you know, as we start building a framework for your time, which, you know, all of this, we're everything, these money conversations always come back to our time. That's really why we're putting the focus on money is how do we get back more of our time? Because we recognize the relationship between the two and how can we build that credibility by having these conversations with our children earlier?
Yeah, Jonathan, I love the trust aspect of that. And I think that also kind of plays into the actual money itself, right? And what they can do with it. I think, you know, like you said, this is, everybody has their own methodology for how they dole out allowance. And that's, you know, we're not going to get into that now, certainly, regardless of, you know, do you get it for doing chores? Do you get it for being a member of the family? Do you, you know, et cetera, et cetera. That's beyond the scope of this. But I think, you know, I've talked before where we've set up a system where we ideally would like the kids, and they do get to choose, but they have these three buckets, right? They have the spending, the saving, and the charity. And ideally, they're saving 50%+ of it, but that really is up to them. But the spending part, that's the part where I think trust does come in as well, right? In that if that truly is their spending money, their spending bucket, then you don't have a say as a parent in how they spend that money. And you don't have a say in how quickly they spend that money, right? And I know I see this with my younger daughter. And I mean, she is so, Jonathan, it's funny. You know me, obviously, as a fidgeter, right? I've got your wife, Dani, was kind enough to get me this cool fidget cube. I've
she
got,
like, saw that. Three. She saw it on Amazon, I think. It got suggested to her. And she's like, we should get that for Brad.
I'm literally holding two of my fidget things at the moment. So these things are never far from me. And it's funny because, and that was very kind of Dani. And, I use it every day and appreciate it. But now Molly and her friend are into, not because of me, but they're into buying these fidget items. And it's amazing how many different fidget items there are. But I mean, almost, I don't know, twice a week, let's say, three times a week, maybe, Molly's getting an Amazon package of fidgets that she bought. And I'm like, Miles, where did you get all the money from this? But I mean, she has it from saving up her spending money, if you will. And that's kind of the point, right? And not for one second did we say like, oh, you shouldn't do that, or oh, you should save it. Or like, this is her money. It's funny, actually, that this did, I mean, no joke, Jonathan, this was a conversation we had in the last week here in the house. So it's extremely timely. But I think trust is what is the tie that binds all of us.
Yeah, I mean, your point there, and obviously it's not that you're abdicating or giving up on encouraging Molly to save more money, far from it, but it's going to be a strategy rethink, because you can't, and this is where you're going with that, you cannot betray that trust. You cannot suddenly go from this is your money to use, psych, take backs, it was only your money if you make the same life choices that dad makes, and actually now your allowance is getting cut in half because you got 8 fidgeters. You know, that's not the point of this. So then you can start building on that with, all right, what is something they want more than a fidgeter? Something that's going to take a lot longer. They can have a medium term mindset, and we can save for this. And so, you know, although again, this is not the kid finance episode, I will tell everybody, Doug and Carol's book is beyond amazing. I'm personally choosing this book. This book only exists because the FI community asked Doug to work with Carol to get it made for years and years. It's phenomenal. And what it does is the next step here, especially for like an 8-year-old, would be, all right, we've got these money lessons in place. We're encouraging them to save. How could we incentivize them? An 8-year-old will become a 16-year-old relatively soon. What does a 16-year-old want? They're probably going to want a car. It's going to be something that's going to come up. What if we could create a kid 401k? What if we could create a highly incentive? And again, I know that sounds very US centric. It's not. Anyone in the world can use this. It's just, but the 401k obviously means something to us here, but you don't need the IRS to approve this. This is something that's done in the bank of mom and dad. This is a construct that's created to highly incentivize your child to set something aside for the medium term. And so it's like that point of growth. But if they don't trust you with 25 cents a dollar because you're pulling the cord on it, they're certainly not going to trust you when you're talking about a couple $100 or a couple $1,000, or they're not going to take it seriously. So we keep layering on different strategies, but it's built on credibility. Credibility with your time, credibility with money.
Yeah, and Jonathan, speaking of second generation FI, I got this amazing email. So, I write the FI weekly newsletter that goes out every Tuesday, and I just get these just amazing responses. It's so wonderful and gratifying to see all the action people are taking. And Barbara wrote in, she said, my 1% better. My daughter's partnered with the neighbor's children to launch a dog biscuit business.
Ooh.
They baked peanut butter dog treats and sold at a local dog park. It was a great way to learn about budgeting for ingredients, teamwork for production, pricing and marketing. The kids kept a ledger and plan to expand to other pet treats once they build their following. I thought that was so cool. I actually followed up for some more details from Barbara. And she said, my kids have listened to the Simple Startup episodes with Rob Phelan with me. And she said, a few months ago, they tried launching a dog walking business, but could not find neighbors willing to trust 9 and 11-year-olds with their dogs, which, yeah, I get. And she said, since the girls love to bake cookies and love dogs, I asked if they wanted to bake biscuits for dogs. They found a simple recipe online, and it launched from there with a little guidance from me on how to think about pricing and marketing. Their first day, Jonathan, get this. Their first day, they netted almost $30 in sales.
What?
Right? Isn't that amazing? They plan to bake again on Friday afternoon.
She said netted. Saturday. She said net.
Yeah, if that's a net profit after ingredients, that's pretty darn good. So it looks like, yeah, and sell Saturday morning when the parks are full of dogs. So they know where their audience is. And she said, I'm so proud of them. And it's been so much fun to watch the kids piece things together. How cool is that?
That's amazing. I'm blown away and proud for her, for them. Just unbelievable. And look, the thing there was, and sorry, we're going on a slight tangent here, but they pivoted too. Their initial idea didn't work, but they pivoted into something that is absolutely incredible.
It's funny. That was my big takeaway too.
Yeah.
Like that, of all the good parts of this email and the story, like that to me was the best part is, hey, sometimes you have an idea that you think is going to work and it just doesn't, you know, and that's fine. Does that mean you're a failure? This is for all of us. This is not just for dog walking business. Like, does that mean you're a failure? No, it means you tested something out and you know a little bit more about the world than you did yesterday. That doesn't sound like a failure to me, especially when you do it Alan Donegan style and you don't spend any money, right? Like if you put a flyer together and put it in people's mailboxes for dog walking, maybe you spend a couple bucks and that's that, right? If you don't get any clients, all right, no harm, no foul, let's pivot. And it sounds like they did. So yeah, really, really cool. And I love the reference in there to the simple startup. And those are the kind of principles that Rob teaches, right? And he's actually, they have their summer challenge starting, I think, in the end of June. So if anybody's interested in that for their kids, it's over on our foundation's website, but you can get there just going to choosevet.com/startup. So choosevet.com/startup, check that out. But yeah, I mean, Rob is really helping, I mean, hundreds upon hundreds of kids start their businesses. So yeah, this is a cool email. And Barbara, huge congrats to your kids.
Hey, this is Andrew from the ChooseFI team. Hope you're enjoying the show. We're going to get right back to it after these quick messages.
So Brad, we're going to switch gears and we have a really cool conversation teed up around risk tolerance. But before we do that, I guess speaking of credibility a little bit here, we made a recommendation a week or two ago and we named a product that we both really love, but then we actually never actually explicitly named the product. And I know you got a bunch of emails specifically asking for that to the degree that it was kind of difficult just to answer them on a one-on-one basis. So why don't we go ahead and close that loop now for individuals that are listening to every episode?
Yeah, it's funny. That close the loop thing, you know, is like my biggest pet peeve when I listen to podcasts. It's like, you can't float something and then not give me the right resolution. So the fact that we did this definitely tears me up. So yeah, I got a lot of emails. Basically, it was on our episode 317. It might actually, Jonathan, have been on a second episode, which makes that even worse. But all the hacks with Chris Hutchins. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about these little life hacks. And you and I have both really benefited from a very low cost wardrobe of t-shirts that you're currently wearing. And yeah, I mean, I've worn these shirts for years now. They're like the super comfortable shirts you get, like, you know, at all these conferences that you and I go to that people use. I mean,
right. Before, like, wow. Really, people in generally in this space, people that, you know, write online content, people that go to various conferences are always talking about the t-shirts that conferences have. In contrast, when I went to a VCU basketball game and they gave me a Rams t-shirt, I was like looking down my nose at the quality of the t-shirt. I was like, this doesn't feel good. They cheaped out on t-shirts. It's because yes, you get very, very spoiled by high quality t-shirts.
Right. They're like the stiff old shirts from like 1985.
Brutal Loom, but like the old ones. Yeah. No polyester in there.
No. So anyway, long story short, the shirts that I buy, so you and I both buy from a website called Clothing Shop Online. So it's just clothingshoponline.com. The shirts that I like are the Next Level brand. So you just like search entire store, you go to Next Level, all their shirts will come up. I think the ones, hold on, give me a sec. The ones that I've bought before are the 6200 and the 6210. So you can't miss it. These shirts are like somewhere between $4 and $7 each. They're just like super comfortable t-shirts. They have men's and women's styles. So yeah, anyway, this is one of those little life hacks that I have benefited from. Jonathan, you've benefited from. So yeah, these are good shirts. So check it out. So clothing shop online.
We try to create these episodes to serve at least like, you know, 10% of our audience. If 10% of our audience gets value from each episode, we feel like we're winning. We recognize that this particular suggestion probably only helps like 1% of you. But for those 1%, we're closing the loop.
And you're going to thank us for years to come. Yeah. So yeah, this is definitely one of my favorite life hacks for sure.
Clothingshoponline.com, Brad.
Yeah, and they're next level t-shirts.
Awesome. All right, so let's switch gears. And I want to spend a couple minutes talking about risk tolerance. And it's actually interesting because I know when we were releasing this episode last Friday, we actually did an episode on cryptocurrency. And I think it was pretty well received. The actual title of the episode was Pump and Dump, which really was, we were not saying that all cryptocurrency is a pump and dump. We were really just identifying a very specific tactic that is being seen and replicated in the crypto space specifically right now over and over and over again. But it gave us an excuse to talk about that, but then also expand out and talk about cryptocurrencies in general. So with that in mind, the week was very volatile, actually. We recorded that in advance, but by the Friday that it went out, it was a very volatile week. And many people that had a perception of the risk tolerance earlier in the week had a different perception of the risk tolerance by the end of the week. And I have a very, very specific use case of this.
And that's their own risk tolerance, right? Not just crypto, right? But their risk tolerance, that's what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say right now we're probably looking at it through the crypto lens, but I think generally it's setting up us up for a larger conversation.
Gotcha.
I have this one friend in mind, and he's always been very proud of the fact that he has one whole Bitcoin. And I get that, you know, I know individuals that maybe have more than that, but I can certainly see if someone had like 0.75 Bitcoin, a fractional Bitcoin or 0.8 or whatever, they'd be like, man, it'd be really cool if I could get to one whole one. And I'd had conversations around with him around like, well, you know, like it's pretty high right now. Like, do you want to, have you ever thought about making any adjustments around that? It's a pretty volatile investment. And his point to me was, you know what, at this time, I don't even really care if it goes down. I just want to always be able to say with the benefit of hindsight that I have one Bitcoin. I just think there's something really cool about having that. Well, that conversation had happened roughly around when Bitcoin was worth, you know, 50, 53,000 somewhere. It had gotten up as high as 65, and I think it was floating around 53 at the time. This week happened, and we saw it go down to a low of right around 30,000. And we had a second version of that conversation, and he said, well, I'm selling my Bitcoin. I'm not on that ride anymore. And it turns out, I just wanted to point this out to people. At the time when Bitcoin was near or approaching an all-time high, his perception of what his risk tolerance was a lot more bullish. I can take the risk. I am totally, you know, it could go down to 5,000, it could go down to 20,000. It might also go up to 100,000 or 120. I don't really care. I have a good risk tolerance. I'm in it for the long term because I want to just be able to say I hold one Bitcoin. But when you actually see it drop, when you actually see it happen, and something that was worth 56 or 65 is now worth 30 or 33 or 37, suddenly it was, you know what? Maybe the one Bitcoin doesn't matter to me quite as much as I thought it was. Now it's very easy to pick. Bitcoin had a rough week. All of crypto had a rough week. It's very easy to pick on crypto or on Bitcoin. But there's a larger lesson for all of us here in terms of accurately assessing and being intellectually honest with what our risk tolerance is. And I say that to say, and I'll give this back to you, Brad, that from 2009 to 2020, we went straight up. For nearly 12 years, 10 plus years, we just went straight up. 18% returns, 15% returns year over year. And the FI community grew in numbers over that same interim period of time. From Mr. Money Mustache really, you know, getting a foothold probably and really reaching a lot of people in 2011, 2012. JL Collins building his platform out. Mad Scientist building the platform out. Afford Anything, Choose FI, so many more. All of these platforms started educating people largely as a result of we went through the recession, the 2008-2009 recession. We strategized what would it look like for that to not happen again for us and for people that are listening to, you know, kind of our content. And all of us, because again, we've been in a bull run for 12 years, have to be intellectually honest with what our own risk tolerance is. And I would say that people in 2019, their risk tolerance and their assessment of what their risk tolerance was is fundamentally different than their risk tolerance in 2021. Now, some people said, yep, I nailed it. That was perfect. I am glad that I assessed my risk tolerance where I did in 2019. And there were others of us that are saying, maybe it's time to reassess. Maybe I wouldn't want to do that if it were to happen again the exact same way that I did it this last time around.
Yeah, and it's so easy, like you said, in bull markets of any type. And this is not picking on cryptocurrency by any means. This is just human psychology. It's so easy when things are going up to imagine that you have the fortitude you need, right? That if there's a downturn, of course I can stomach it. Of course my risk tolerance is enough for 100% equities, right? Or putting 20% of my net worth in crypto or whatever, you know, thing you basically come up with, right? I don't ultimately care what it is, but man, you find out, this is like the Warren Buffett quote about when the tide goes out, do you discover who's been swimming naked, right? Like, yeah. And this is the mental version of this. Like, hey, when March 2020 hit, we all just went through that, right? What happened? What were your thoughts? Did you sleep well at night knowing that your net worth just dropped 30%+? Did you take action? Did you sell? Did you whatever? And I'm not even implying that there's a right answer, because I think, Jonathan, you and I both figured out that maybe we didn't have the same risk tolerance that we anticipated that we did. And, you know, we've talked about that before, so that's not the point of this now. But I think the point is to be honest with yourself, right? Like, I think that at the heart of everything we're doing here is that you need to take a step back and figure out, what do you actually think? What do you actually believe? What happens when? ... Right? Like, that's the point of planning in advance. That's the point of, like we've talked about with the investor policy statement, right? Like, hey, I've planned this out in advance. And sure, it's easy to do that again when you've only experienced a bull market, but maybe those investor policy statements need to be updated, you know, because you've been through the muck now and you know how you actually are going to respond. So I think that's a perfectly plausible thing. I hope people out there are doing that, whether they're actually writing down their investor policy statement or not. You got to put in the thought. You got to just remember, sure, it's easy now, right? Like, hey, everything's recovered. Everything's flying high. It's almost like it was preordained, but it certainly wasn't, you know, on March 18th or whatever, you know, whatever date, it's somewhere in the end of March, early April of 2020. There was no way to know that the stock market would have this crazy recovery and things would be flying high. Like, that, if you were a betting person, I certainly wouldn't have bet on that. And, you know, that again, it's always easy with hindsight, but that's not the point. It's like the Annie Duke concept of resulting. And I think this is one of the most important mental models that people need to acquaint themselves with. So go back, listen to our episode with Annie Duke, listen to her on other podcasts, like read her books. Thinking in Bets was just a life-changing book for me. And it's easy after the fact to look at the result and say, oh, of course that was a good decision or a bad decision. But that's not the way the world works. The world works with imperfect information, and you make the best decision you can at the time, and you're then constantly updating your understanding of the world when new information comes in. This is how science works. This is how your brain should work. This is how decision-making should work. And people get lost in the weeds. And I think this is an example. Again, it's easy to look back with the benefit of hindsight and say, oh, this was easy. But on March 27th of 2020, it wasn't easy. And I know that personally. And I know that my risk tolerance isn't what I thought that it was. And that's valuable information for me.
And Brad, you know, as you kind of think through, what does that mean for you? For me, it was interesting as well. It was that when it went down, I was still okay with the plan that I was on being 100% equities. And it was, you know, not fun to watch it drop like it did in March of 2020, but I was okay with that. But I didn't enjoy the lack of flexibility that I had at the bottom, that all my moves were made. Basically, I was fine. I wasn't like scared. It was more just that like I had kind of locked myself into one outcome. And then as it came back, you know, I just kept dollar cost averaging, kept investing, kept et cetera. And it did, it came back and that was great. I mean, that was a wonderful move on that part. But when I came back out, I was like, it would have been kind of cool to have more options when something like that happens, to feel like you're not just totally at the whim of whatever direction this thing ends up going, but to have basically some chips left on the table to play. Now, there's pros and cons to that. And I'm not really validating that as the strategy, but what I'm pointing out is, the time to make adjustments to your plan is not when your portfolio has dropped by 20 to 30% and you have no chips left to play. Oh, let me just sell out and get my money out while it's all 30% off. that it's structurally the wrong time. But what we do is we look at how we felt, and then when things are good again, right? And this is the key, when things are good again, that's when we go back to our investor policy statement. We said, all right, if another scenario like that were to have happened, what changes would I want to make? And so for my friend with his one Bitcoin, he thought he didn't care about the price. And I don't know how you make that real enough to actually realize, like, hey, what if you had a portfolio that said you had $80,000 and now you only have $20,000 or $30,000? How is that actually going to make you feel? What would you do in that scenario? But we need to like try to go back to these war game scenarios and be very intellectually honest with ourselves about what is our state of mind going to be? What options would we have left? The closer, you know, not the more accurate, because we don't know. We have no idea what's coming. But the more variables that we can start to account for and the more scenarios that we can start to account for, the more realistic we can get with our investor policy statement. And we've actually had an episode talking about this, and we can have this linked up. Brad, maybe you could even look for that article as I kind of put my final thought on this, and we can send them over to that. But this is the time. The market has returned with a vengeance. It's feeling really, really strong. If you have been thinking to yourself, you know what, let me go dust that off and make sure I'm still happy with what that plan was, you want to do it now. So what did it look like for me? Well, I really got a lot of appreciation for what Frank talked about. And we had a whole episode with Frank really talking about this idea of negative correlation. So for me, it wasn't so much that I like love bonds or that I have all this faith in bonds, et cetera. It was that I love the idea of having a little bit of negative correlation. When something's going down, I have something else that's going up, so I have more options to make decisions. That was it for me. So maybe that would be just a tool to keep in mind. Is that important to you? Maybe, maybe not. You don't have to, but this is the time. This is the season that we start thinking through that, not when, you know, we've had one of the stools kicked out from underneath us. Just like with Bitcoin, you want to be thinking about what your plan is with Bitcoin when it's kind of at or near an all-time high. That's a great time to think about, you know, do I want to pull some profits or am I in this for the long term and I don't care what happens? And it's tough to really put yourself there, but now, you know, when it's at 30K, now it's like, well, you know, I wish I had done it 50, whatever. It doesn't really matter, but it's the same thing for us. Even if you don't have crypto, we can still learn lessons from the volatility because we've seen versions of that. And we can say, what does that mean for us as we do our long-term planning?
Jonathan, in that little monologue there, you mentioned three things I did want to mention. So Frank Vasquez, we just had him on recently, episode 313, Are You as Diversified as You Think You Are? Then we had an episode on an investor policy statement. That was episode 189. And then we have a separate article on how to create an investor's policy statement.
Perfect. And we will have all those linked up in the show notes for today's episode. So, you know, if any of those sparked that, oh yeah, I should take action, make that your one thing, and then let Brad know or let us know in the Facebook group. All right, my friends, I hope you're getting value from today's episode. Definitely subscribe if you have not yet already and share it with a friend if you're getting value. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
If this episode was helpful to you, don't forget to subscribe. If you want to help spread the word, please give us a 5-star review and tell your friends about us. We can be found on Apple, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere you listen to podcasts. While you're there, don't forget to check out our other shows like Everyday Courage with Julian Johnsrud and Rebel Entrepreneur with Alan Dalmagan. If you would like a free bite-sized course to jumpstart your financial independence, check out chooseify.com/challenge. Chooseify is produced by Andrew Mendonza and Zachary Tan and is a production of Chooseify Media Incorporated. Chooseify.com is managed by Annie Sheely with William McVeigh, MK Williams, Melissa Lagerquist, Liz Kessler, Stephen Heptig, Kelly Black, and Jennifer Ma. And Ed T is our CEO. Thanks for listening.